This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. To successfully compete in 21st century business, companies must reinvent their processes and culture in order to sustain innovative solutions. In their new book, The New Age of Innovation, Driving Co-Created Value Through Global Networks, authors C.K. Prahlad and M.S. Krishnan argue that the key to creating value and future growth of every business depends on accessing a global network of resources to co-create unique experiences with customers one at a time. To achieve this, CEOs, executives, and managers at every level must transform their business processes, technical systems, and supply chain management, implementing key social and technological infrastructure requirements to create an ongoing innovation advantage. C.K. Prahlad is widely recognized as one of the most influential business thinkers in the world today. And Dr. M.S. Krishnan is a professor of business information technology at the University of Michigan Business School. Gentlemen, thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
C.K., you write in the book about the morphing of the competitive landscape. How has it changed?
If you look at what has changed in the last 10 years, for the first time in human history, more than 3 billion people are connected either through a cell phone or a PC. The estimates are in the next 5 years, 4 billion people would be connected. That means there is going to be increasing symmetry of information across the world. Second is the whole process of digitization. If you look at how the costs are going down, I can buy an 8 gig USB stick for less than $50 today, or take iPod, which is a massive storage device. So you look at it and say digitization is going to drive costs down almost to a point that technology is not anymore uniquely the privilege of the rich. The entire world can get access to technologies in some form. The third is the convergence of technologies and convergence of industry boundaries. 20 years ago, when somebody said, this is a television, this is a computer, and this is a phone, they all were distinct, clearly identifiable products. Today, if I see your cell phone, it is certainly a telephone, it is a computer, it's a camera, it's a watch, and increasingly it is a television set and a radio. So the industry boundaries are all breaking apart. And then finally, the emergence of social networks where communities are getting formed. So if you put the four of them together and look at globalization, which feeds these four drivers, and these four drivers feed globalization, we need to ask the question, can the same view of innovation, the same view of value creation and strategy that was born in the pre-digital age still survive? This, we believe, is the morphing of the nature of the firm, the nature of the consumer, the nature of the interaction between the two. And that, I think, is going to have a serious impact on how we think about innovation.
And how have all these changes influenced the idea of innovation?
If you look at 90% of the research and practice on innovation, one way to characterize it is still very product-centric and firm-centric. We assume the firm creates value and firm innovates. We also assume that it is about products and maybe services. You can ask an interesting question. If I look at Google today, just as an example, they don't produce any of the content. They create a platform where I can go and construct my own page. I can pick and choose what information I want. They're helping me create my own experiences, even though they serve 50 to 100 million consumers. So you can have a very large consumer base, and at the same time, uniquely serve each person and create a unique experience. Google cannot create the experience for me by itself. I need to participate in creating my own experience. They provide the platform. So we used to think of Google and Starbucks and Apple and eBay and Amazon, but in the book we give tons of examples of what people normally call Rust Belt businesses like tires and insurance, tutoring of students, and so on. So essentially what we are saying is, how do we move from a product and a firm-centric view of innovation to a personalized, co-created view of innovation, one consumer experience at a time that is unique?
Krishnan, what are some of the enablers or processes to make innovation happen?
If I follow from the examples that CK mentioned, first, the management has to buy into the concept that CK just explained, that value is co-created with consumers. It's not a particular firm making a product or service selling to create value or selling solutions. So that transcending nature of how value is created has to be bought by the entire management team. Once that is accepted, we need to look at the business processes, because business processes are the essence of this process of innovation, because they enable the orchestration of resources that CK talked about. So companies have to start thinking about the resilience in their business process architecture. Most of the cases, that's where the impediments start, because you find that business processes are first not exactly owned by anybody in large organizations, because these business processes often cross the functional boundaries of the firms, which means that end-to-end knowledge of how the business process functions does not rest anywhere in an accountable way.
You seem to be suggesting, though, that you need new management skills.
Yes, we need both new management skills and we need new perspective on the technical architecture which supports the business processes in large companies.
Is this only a technology issue, or is this also a skill-based issue?
The point we take in the book is it's not just a technology issue. First and foremost, we talk about the social architecture that is required for this execution of N equal to 1 or equal to G. We have to come to terms with the level of transparency, with the level of flexibility that is required for this new model of innovation. And we have to socialize our managers, because we have to start thinking about, what are the impediments for me if I have to implement this in my organization? The first and the foremost thing that comes to mind is the legacy mindset and the dominant logic that exists within companies. First, we have to come to terms with that, understand what the dominant logic is. How are we incentivizing our managers? And how does that need to change? Then we move on to the next important part of this, that is building the right technical architecture to support these business processes.
CK, for those of us who aren't familiar with the formula, can you explain to us what N equal to 1, R equal to G actually means?
Our starting assumption is that the key driver of this new industrial landscape is creating a different opportunity of one consumer experience at a time. These experiences are very personal, like in Starbucks or in Apple or in Google or eBay. It is unique to one individual, and often it is co-created with the company. There are two problem solvers. So we are going from customer segmentation to customer of one to unique, personalized, co-created experience. That is the focus of value and value creation. In order to describe this in a shorthand, we call it N equal to 1. N equal to 1 simply says it is one consumer experience at a time. Nothing more, nothing less. At the same time, in order to fulfill this experience, we need to access resources from multiple sources. This is the opposite of vertical integration. Vertical integration assumes that the firm can possess all the resources. Today, we are saying, irrespective of how big you are, you cannot have all the resources that are required in order to fulfill one consumer experience at a time. And again, to take a well-known example, Google does not produce any of the content, neither does Apple produce any of its content. Neither does eBay produce any of the products that are traded. So you really start looking at this and say, resources must be sourced from wherever it is best possible to source it, high quality and low cost. Therefore, you need to have a view of resources as multi-institutional, maybe sometimes global. But the key is it's multi-institutional, a whole ecosystem providing resources. As a shorthand, we say resources must equal global, therefore R equal to G.
One of the impediments I know you mention in your book is the lack of senior management evangelism. And that term struck me. Can you say more about this and why does it disappear?
We tend to go from initiative to initiative in management. This is initiative for this year. Rather than saying, what are the core values that we passionately believe in? And I want to use the term passion, courage, humanity, and humility as an integral part of leadership. Because we have taken emotion out of management. If I don't believe that this centrality of the individual, either as an employee or as a consumer, is critical for us to understand, if you don't passionately believe in it and continuously preach that value, it's not going to stay. It is not an initiative. N equal to 1 or equal to G is not an initiative for this year. This is the way we do business. And this is an organizing philosophical underpinning as well as practical how to make money. But you must start with deep understanding that we have to work with large number of other companies and vendors, single suppliers who are very talented, to small companies, large companies in an ecosystem. I cannot have all the resources myself, irrespective of how big I am. That is a belief structure that you must start with.
Let's look at three types of individuals. Krishnan, you're talking about line managers, chief information officers, technology people. How do their roles change? Do they become evangelists because they have to kind of go down and get ideas?
Yes. When we start talking about how do you do this in your firm, if you really want to execute the concept of N equal to 1 or equal to G, we point out some important disconnects that are there in large companies that actually become impediments. One of those disconnects is the disconnect between the business line managers who are responsible for executing the business functions and the technology organization that is supposed to provide all the support behind the processes that run the business. Often, what has happened is we have actually almost grown these two organizations in silos. One is not exposed to the other, and it is not rare to find that in large companies, they often talk past each other in different languages because one is not exposed to the other in terms of real business problems or the capabilities of technologies. In fact, the evangelism concept, we also bring in that concept because, as CK mentioned, we move from initiatives to initiatives. We kick off with a large effort, which is multi-million dollars, to digitize processes, and that's an initiative, and move on. Often the top management and even the line managers do not have the time to pursue and find out the experience that is created with that particular initiative and also how it is coming back and tying to the new capabilities and skills that we are supposed to build for such an innovation.
CK, Krishnan, what I hear is a lot about talent management. And of course, everybody's talking about talent management. Talent management does appear to be a major issue in innovation. Could you comment on the impact of transformation as far as talent management is concerned?
Actually, the starting point for us is you can't do N equal to 1 with consumers without treating the internal organization as N equal to 1. That means talent management must uniquely understand each person, her strengths and her weaknesses and her potential for collaboration, her potential for cross-cultural work. So in some sense, putting together a global team, identifying who are the people who can work well in that global team requires a deep understanding of each individual, not just somebody's credentials. These people have masters in engineering, so they must be good. They may be very good in engineering, but awful in cross-cultural work. So if you put them in a team, it could lead to disaster. I think you need to understand the whole person, and you need to treat them as unique individuals.
First, you have to treat each individual as unique and focus on their skills. Second, we also have to understand that in the N equal to 1 or equal to G model, we'll have roles of the moment. What it really means is that at a particular point in time, you are co-creating experience for that unique customer and orchestrating resources for that, which means as an employee, you could be playing different roles either within a week or within a day, depending upon which customer you are serving. So it is important to map the skills and also understand the individual's strengths and weaknesses.
Actually, we could anchor it in a very specific example. Let's take call center operators. You get different calls from different kinds of customers. One is a very critical customer, very irate about something. You want to then connect that person with a call center operator who is very knowledgeable and smart enough to diffuse that anger and help that person. And the next call may be a much more routine call. Unless we understand the capabilities of call center operators and dynamically route these calls, then we are not going to accomplish what we want in terms of creating unique experiences. So you can take it down to the call center level. That's what we mean by looking at employees as n equal to one. We understand each person very well.
And in mapping, you actually are identifying what strengths are needed. So therefore, you can also undertake learning.
That's right. That's right.
To help people.
Absolutely. That's right.
So learning can take place to prepare people who don't have these skills.
That's right.
CK and Krishnan, is there anything you want to share with us that you feel, just in general, people aren't aware of or should be made aware of?
We do not believe that companies have to go through a big revolution to move this. You need to take measured small steps, but directionally consistent. So you experiment, you learn, you consolidate, and move forward. You need to build the skills, you need to build the underlying technical infrastructure. So this is not a call for revolution. This is a call for systematic evolution by de-risking the big opportunity. That's a very different starting point. And I believe it can be done. TQM was a big debate 20 years ago. Now there is no debate. Globalization was a big debate, and outsourcing was a big debate. Now everybody is doing it, and if you don't do it, you're just behind. I believe this is the same. 5 years ago, co-creation was a new idea. Now everybody's talking about co-creation. It has almost become part of their vocabulary. So I believe that the companies which take the initiative today are going to spend less time, less energy, less disruptive changes in the organization. You can do it much more systematically. That's the point. So don't wait. If you see this is inevitable, just get on with it. Embrace the inevitable and exploit the opportunities rather than denying it for as long as you can. That's the key message in the book.
We'd like to thank C.K. Prahlad and M.S. Krishnan, authors of the new book, The New Age of Innovation. Thanks a lot for visiting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It would be great to get some feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Your email or phone message might be heard on a future episode. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.